Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm James Hattori, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Last summer, John McCain's presidential campaign was on the rocks, out of money, and seemingly out of steam. But that was then. What's happening now is that the Republican political winds are again shifting. And over the last few days, McCain has landed some important endorsements. This hour on Point, Senator John McCain's re-energized run for the White House. We expect to hear this hour from Senator McCain himself, who's traveling in New Hampshire aboard his bus, the Straight Talk Express. But first, to Des Moines, Iowa, and Holly Bailey, who's covering the presidential campaign for Newsweek magazine. Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Can you tell us, is there a sign of new momentum for the McCain campaign today?
Well, I think there's no question that there is. He's gotten, you know, again, as you mentioned, this guy was written off this summer as basically dead in the water. I remember one of the Washington pundits saying that it was dead man walking with John McCain. But the fact is that he's getting endorsement after endorsement, including picking up a big endorsement from the Des Moines Register, which is pretty notable because John McCain hasn't spent a lot of time here in Iowa lately. In fact, you know, people were expecting maybe the paper to endorse Mike Huckabee or Mitt Romney, but instead it was sort of a surprise. So you can't write this guy off, not at all. He's gotten a lot of really great headlines the past couple of days. His financial situation has improved, and he's doing a lot basically with not very much right now.
What do the polls show exactly? And I know they probably predate these latest endorsements, but where does he stand and from the numbers point of view?
Well, the numbers point of view, it still isn't that great. I mean, here in Iowa, he's, you know, basically not anywhere near the top of the pack. But in New Hampshire, he's still, I believe, showing a strong third. But the fact is that John McCain is benefiting from basically disarray in the Republican field right now. You know, Mike Huckabee has sort of shaken things up by moving up so much in the polls in Iowa and South Carolina and also nationally. And people just, you know, the fact is we're getting down to the wire and people still aren't satisfied with the field right now, it seems. And I think John McCain is really benefiting from that.
Do the endorsements, you think, make a difference for voters there?
I think they do in some respects. I mean, if you just have to remember 4 years ago, John Edwards, for example, was basically nowhere in the Iowa polls. I believe he was, you know, fourth or fifth, and he got the endorsement from the Des Moines Register and ended up placing a surprise second. So these things can happen, and I think can help. And I think, especially in New Hampshire, picking up the union leader endorsement was a big deal for McCain. The Boston Globe was a huge deal for McCain, considering, you know, Mitt Romney's from there. You know, the fact is what John McCain has to do right now is really keep the momentum going, is to just keep on the trail and stick with this, I think, and really sort of try to exploit some of this new attention on his campaign.
Now, you're in Iowa, and to be blunt, he has not put a lot of attention on Iowa. In fact, he's sort of downplayed the importance of his performance there, saying that even if he ran as 50th, he'd still go on, you know, with his campaign. Do you expect that he can make up significant ground there, or is he looking ahead to New Hampshire?
I think he's looking ahead to New Hampshire. What's important for John McCain in Iowa is the rise of Mike Huckabee, because one of the biggest threats to John McCain in New Hampshire is obviously Mitt Romney. And if Mitt Romney can't win Iowa, you know, a state that he's spent millions of dollars on and countless trips and time, you know, that really is going to, I think, hurt his campaign. So if Mike Huckabee can at least, you know, can win Iowa or at least place a strong second, sort of take some of Mitt Romney's momentum away, then that gives John McCain an opening in New Hampshire. Especially, you know, the past couple of days we've seen Rudy Giuliani also sort of dial down in New Hampshire. He's not running as many ads. He hasn't been visiting there as much. So John McCain, I think, has a real opening there.
Holly Bailey, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you.
Holly's covering the presidential campaign for Newsweek. She spoke with us from Des Moines, Iowa. Now joining us from Washington, D.C., Ryan Lizza, staff writer for The New Yorker. He has been out on the campaign trail for some time, and welcome to the show, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me, James.
You know, these endorsements are undoubtedly welcome news for the McCain campaign, but is it a sign that he's about to turn the corner, do you think?
Yeah, something is definitely happening with McCain. I disagree with Holly on a couple of things. I do think that the path for John McCain is a little bit more difficult. And, you know, these endorsements have a different effect in different places. The Des Moines Register in Iowa almost always endorses the Democrat in the general election, and that causes a lot of Republicans to consider it, rightfully so in some respects, at least its editorial page, as a liberal newspaper. So there are a lot of hardcore conservatives in Iowa that are going to see an endorsement from the Des Moines Register as perhaps a negative and not a positive for John McCain. But it does feed into the sort of national storyline that something is happening, that the McCain campaign is being resurrected. So maybe it's a net plus in the end. In Boston, it's a in New Hampshire, it's a little different, because what McCain needs to do to win New Hampshire is to rally independents the way he did in 2000. And this is where you get into some of the three-dimensional chess of this race, which seems to get more and more complicated every day. Independents in New Hampshire can vote either on the Democratic side or the Republican side. And they tend to vote on the side where they're going to have a little bit more influence, where the action is. So in 2000, when Al Gore had a huge victory over Bill Bradley in the Iowa caucuses, a lot of independents in New Hampshire said, you know what, it's not worth playing on the Democratic side, I'll play on the Republican side. And they flooded into that Republican primary and voted for John McCain in big numbers. Well, this time around, McCain needs the same thing to happen. And the way for that to happen is for something similar to happen. So, Hillary Clinton sort of has a big crushing victory over Barack Obama in Iowa. Well, then in the independents who are sort of leaning towards Obama in the Democratic primary might say, or in the Democratic race, might say, well, it's not worth our time. Let's go vote in that Republican primary. But if Obama's looking viable and looking strong, the independents may be drawn to the Democratic primary. So even though McCain is not playing in Iowa, what happens in Iowa is hugely important for his ability to win in New Hampshire. And the second piece of that is, as Holly pointed out, it's in McCain's interest for Huckabee to do very well in Iowa to sort of take out Romney, who's very strong in New Hampshire.
Yeah,
so I guess
it's a very complicated point. Yeah, exactly. But so how do you see him playing out in Iowa? I mean, he's downplayed his campaign in Iowa. He's told it to you.
Yes. That's right. That's right. He's doing what he did in 2000. He's not really playing there. He's made some trips. There's some talk this morning I saw that maybe he'll be back. Maybe we can ask him about that. But I guess my big point is that this is a triple bank shot for McCain. Right? He has to win New Hampshire, and for him to win New Hampshire, things in Iowa, not really his place in Iowa, but Huckabee doing well and Hillary doing well in Iowa are what would help him do well in New Hampshire. So it's yes, his campaign is resurrected. He seems to have some momentum here. He does very well in the head-to-head matchups in the general election, and to the extent that Republicans care about the most electable candidate, he does well. But I don't want to exaggerate how difficult the path is for him.
One of the difficulties has been fundraising. And is that still a problem, or does he expect that or hope that that will resolve itself once he gains some momentum?
Well, their big problem was they built a campaign. They built a sort of Bush-style national campaign and expected the fundraising to be able to meet that sort of those demands. And they had the national staff, they had the national campaign, but the money wasn't coming in to support it. And that's what sort of really, from a financial view, damaged the campaign. Now they have a much more modest campaign. And you know they're able to support the size of the campaign they have. You know, Dan Bartlett, President Bush's former advisor, in a recent speech said he thinks that McCain could be back in the same situation he was in 2000, where he wins New Hampshire but doesn't have the money to go on. Now, what he's benefiting from is, as Holly pointed out, is there's no clear frontrunner in this race. It's a totally fractured field. So, you know, a point in his favor is that this thing is really up for grabs. And if things do work out correctly in Iowa and he does sort of squeeze out a victory in New Hampshire, there's no one dominant Republican like Bush in 2000 who can just sort of crush McCain. You know, you have a fractured field, and when you have a fractured field, it's anyone's game.
So it seems like a pretty critical time right now for John McCain. What's the burning question
absolutely
Facing him, his campaign at this juncture?
You know, I think it's the question that's been there from the beginning, which is, does he really, do conservatives really trust this guy? Do the sort of rank and file Republicans trust him enough to make him their nominee. And I think that, you know, I think that question is being answered more and more in the affirmative as this campaign has gone on, partly because the Republican voters have looked at one candidate after another and just sort of said, you know, next. And so I think, you know, you talk to a lot of conservatives in Washington, and there's this sense that of people just sort of, well, you know, maybe McCain wasn't so bad after all. Yes, we didn't like his position on immigration, and we didn't like his position on the campaign his campaign finance law, but maybe he's the strongest candidate we have. You know, you saw a glowing editorial from the Wall Street Journal today. You saw a glowing editorial from the very conservative union leader recently. So there is this sense of some conservatives sort of coming back home to this guy.
So you're talking about not trusting him on certain issues, not overall
yes.
in terms of his character or standing.
Well, I mean, see, look, some conservatives would argue it is a character question because they've felt betrayed on some of these issues. It's funny. I don't know if all your listeners realize this, but McCain-Feingold was a huge issue for a lot of Republican Republican groups who thought it really damaged their ability to operate during campaigns and in politics.
I'm James Vettori, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We're talking about John McCain's second wind of sorts, a new raft of endorsements as the Republican voters struggle to pick a favorite from a crowded field of candidates. My guest this hour is Ryan Lizza, staff writer for The New Yorker. He's been covering the campaign for the magazine. We'll be hearing in a little while, we expect, from Senator McCain himself. But first, I'd like to bring into the conversation from Greater Washington, D.C., David Brooks, columnist for The New York Times. Welcome, David.
Good to be with you.
You know, we've been talking about this sort of critical juncture for John McCain right now. We hope to hear from him, as I mentioned. But what do you think is the question that is facing him and his campaign at this point?
Well, I agree with Ryan's assessment of the race. He's like a playoff team that needs somebody else's help to actually win the thing. But he has one thing going for him, and that's been the cornerstone of McCain's life, which is the word honor. I mean, he developed this sense of honor and his sense of commitment to the country and POW camp in Vietnam. And he strayed from it from a time to time in Georgia. A couple of years ago, he supported the Confederate flag, and early in the campaign, he tried to pretend to be George Bush. But he always essentially comes back to who he is, which is a slightly independent maverick figure who you can count on to stand by his beliefs, even at some political cost. Supporting the war and the surge was a political cost. Supporting McCain-Feingold cost him. His immigration stance certainly cost him. And at the end of the day, people have problems sometimes with a politician like that, but there's always some vestigial level of respect there. And so as people may get sick of Romney, maybe weirded out by Huckabee, there's still some strength that McCain can always draw on. And I've traveled with him many times over the years, and essentially he doesn't change. He says the same things, sometimes the same jokes and the same stories, but he is who he is. And he's not going to flip-flop fundamentally. And I think that's fundamentally a strength, that people have this vestigial level of respect for the guy.
Do you think that the endorsements that were announced in recent days will make a difference and turn out more voters or supporters for him?
Well, I do think they reflect the unhappiness for the other candidates. And the rap on McCain this time obviously was that he was last year's fashion, or more exactly the fashion of 8 years ago, and that he was not this year's candidate. And I think the endorsements remind people that maybe he can be this year's candidate. The other thing that's interesting to me is that he does look different than he did 8 years ago. He looks older. He's had cancer in his skin. But he still is campaigning with as much vigor as he did 8 years ago. And I'm struck by the fact that the age issue, I think for a lot of people, has fallen away as people have seen him campaign.
Where do you see the Republican race right now? It seems to be wide open. Will it still take out more months to play out, or will we see a clear favorite after Iowa and New Hampshire?
I've always thought that Iowa and New Hampshire would be the whole ball of wax. And if Romney wins Iowa, you'd have to think that will be it. And if I had to bet, I'd bet on him above anybody else. But the unhappiness with the Republican candidates, which is not a fact of their weakness, I think in resume terms, they overshadow the Democratic candidates. Giuliani was a successful mayor, Romney and Huckabee successful governors, McCain is McCain. But the party is in such a terrible strait. It's in a sort of a crisis, sort of a meltdown of its own. And so as all the candidates try to appeal to the smaller, more ideologically pure party that remains, they twist themselves into knots and discredit themselves. And I think it's fundamentally a crisis of the party. And so I can easily see this crisis stretching out over several primaries for, you know, what seems like an eternity by our schedule today, all the way for up until February 5th.
Ryan, do you think that, I think you did say that New Hampshire is a must-win for McCain.
Yeah.
How do you see it going from there, if in fact he does turn it around and win there?
Well, then you go down south, and there's a couple of questions for McCain. Is one, does he have the money to go on? You know, everyone talks about February 5th. There's some 20 states that are going to vote. You have to spend a lot of money on very expensive advertising markets. Though on the other hand, he's a known quantity. People know who he is, so maybe he can get away with spending a little less. And a couple of questions is after say Romney does lose Iowa. And say that McCain does win New Hampshire, and then when we're presuming a lot here, that Huckabee will have won Iowa. Huckabee's, you go into these southern states, you go into South Carolina, and then Florida before you get into the 20-state contest on February 5th. The big question will be, does Giuliani, having not won any of the early states, have staying power in Florida and those February 5th states? Or does this become a two-man race between McCain and the winner of Iowa? We just don't know it at that point. Look, if he wins New Hampshire, anything can happen. He's in it, you know. The financial situation, I think, will be the biggest question mark at that point.
Okay, let's open up the conversation to some callers. Dave is on the line from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. I think this question, I'll direct it to David Brooks, although anyone should feel free to answer it. John McCain, to me, is the only candidate in the race on either side who really has extensive military experience. He's been really tried in quite a forge, the Persian camps and the Vietnam experience he's got. And we're a country at war and in a much more dangerous world. How do you think that plays with voters, and will that... do you think influence how voters view John McCain now?
David?
Well, obviously his prisoner of war record influenced the way he saw the torture issue. But I would say covering McCain is different than covering the other candidates. The other candidates are very parsimonious with the time they spend with the press, and it's very controlled. With McCain, you sit in the bus with him for 6, 7, 8 hours a day, and you can ask him about anything. And you better come to a day with McCain with 2,500 questions prepared, because you will run through them all. And the astonishing fact of covering him is, because of his experience, you can ask him about the Balkans, you can ask him about Africa, you can ask him about Saudi Arabia, Iran, Turkey. He has pretty good answers to everything. He has a level of knowledge about these things, and especially about military affairs, that frankly surpasses every other candidate, with the possible exception of Joe Biden. And so that's a level of comfort that I think he just goes into. And one of the unresolved questions to me is how much foreign affairs play out, how valuable they are, how important they are in this election. I think a lot of us have always thought this is still a foreign policy election. But over the past couple months, with Iran looking a little less dangerous, with the situation in Iraq stabilizing a little, we've seen voters ask about Iraq less. We've seen domestic issues come to the fore. We've seen Huckabee and Obama, who are domestic policy candidates, rise to the fore. And foreign policy seems to be drifting backward a little. It's still core to who McCain is and how he's running his campaign, however.
Ryan, is Iraq now a plus for McCain? I mean, he's going around saying, we are winning.
You know, it's funny. It's very complicated, because David's absolutely right. As Iraq and terrorism have receded as issues, and as the economy has come into play, we've seen the decline of Hillary and Giuliani, the sort of strong, inevitable front runners who are really running on their sort of foreign policy experience, to a certain extent anyway. With now that that's receded, that's also coincided with McCain's sort of minor comeback here. And I don't know if it's related or not. I mean, one could argue that the war in Iraq has actually not been such a great issue for McCain for most of the year. So the war is actually simultaneously going better but receding as an issue. And I know when I was traveling with McCain recently, he was talking about his trip there and trying to get some credit for supporting the surge that and, you know, he said at every stop, you know, the news from Iraq is we are winning, we are winning, we are winning. I don't know if that's translating into the increased support we're seeing for him or not.
Let's take another caller. Bill is on the line from Northborough, Massachusetts. Hi, Bill.
Thank you for taking my call. Three quick points. On this show, maybe a year or 2 years ago, John McCain said that he supported George Bush over John Kerry because he sincerely believed that George Bush was the better of the two candidates. Point number two, recently he sucked up to Jerry Falwell. And point number three, for all his bluster in the Senate when push came to shove, he failed to support habeas corpus. That violates his oath of office. Spare me the talk about his so-called honor. The Straight Talk Express is just nothing more than slop speak on wheels.
David or Ryan?
You should cover the other guys.
I think David's point from before stands is none of these guys are perfect. And I think the caller has some fair disagreements with McCain, but I think David's characterization as the guy as pretty much who he has always been, you know, through thick and thin, it stands. And the caller has some very important disagreements with the guy, and and I think those are good enough reasons not to vote for McCain.
David, you've said that he has made political compromises. I mean, maybe you can elaborate a little bit. And do they hurt him, and have they hurt him?
Yeah, I mean, he acknowledges that, and he succumbs, I would say, periodically. I mentioned the Confederate flag issue in 2000. That was for political gain. And Ryan mentioned the big mistake of his campaign. He ran early in this campaign as if he was George Bush in 2000 as the big establishment candidate. It wasn't who he is. And he was a phony for a little while there. I remember going to the McCain Christmas party in D.C. About a year ago, and it looked like the Dole campaign. Every hack in town was sitting there. But he shed that after he was forced to, essentially, and he's back to who he is. So he's made these compromises. I would say he's made far fewer compromises than just about every other candidate.
That's always the question, right, is compared to whom? And, you know, when you're running against Mitt Romney, McCain looks pretty good as far as being steadfast and consistent.
You wrote an article about Mr. Romney recently, and you sort of characterized him as, would facile campaigner be an overstatement?
Yeah, I mean, there's something robotic about Romney when he campaigns. I mean, the guy, you know, the Bain business consultant explains, you know, everything you need to know about Romney and the way he's running this campaign. I mean, he sort of looked at the electorate, looked at the conservative coalition, and sort of did this very business-like assessment of how you win each piece of this coalition, without necessarily taking into consideration what that plan was going to do to his character, as far as, you know, shifting on some of these positions. You know, and my analogy, this isn't all that original, is, you know, in the corporate world, in the world that he comes from, you know, sort of reinventing a corporation and having a new marketing strategy is not something that consumers really care about. They don't really care about consistency from Coca-Cola or another company. But for a political candidate, it's really important. And, you know, his lack of consistency has sort of come to define him in this campaign.
Let's go back to the callers. Georgia is calling from Newbury, Vermont. Georgia, hi.
Hi, James. I'm calling from Vermont, just across the river from New Hampshire, and we don't get as much attention over here, but I'd like to think that my opinion still has some bearing. My husband are both independent voters, and we lean pretty far to the left. We are anti-war, but we've always liked Senator McCain because, number one, he seems authentic, and number two, because we know he has the experience that he wouldn't send people over there or keep people over there without fully understanding what the ramifications can be for those people and their families. What I would like to just say to Senator McCain, or a point I'd like to make for him, is that in this election, he's really started to look like he's saying what his advisors are telling him to say, rather than being his genuine self. And I think there are a lot of voters like us out here who just want to have an authentic person up there, and we would vote for the man rather than the policy if he would just be who he is and speak from his heart.
All right. What about that, David?
Well, I think on Iraq, he is whether you like the position or not, he is speaking from his heart. I recall a day in, I guess, 2003, it was shortly after the statue fell, when I heard McCain talk about the fact that we didn't have enough troops. And I remember him privately fuming about Donald Rumsfeld and how Rumsfeld was running the war in a horribly incompetent manner. And he went to Iraq shortly thereafter, came back, made some speeches, said the same thing. And he really was fuming at the Cheney-Rumsfeld axis and how they were running the war with too few troops, really for years. And then when the surge happened, he basically embraced that. And I think the surge has vindicated his earlier critique that the essential problem with Iraq, well, there were many, but one of them was that we never had enough troops. And now that we do have a more significant troop presence, you know, casualties are down, Iraqi casualties are way down. And so I think that's his sincere belief. And I think it's been largely vindicated by events.
Right.
I would say one thing about that. I mean, that's the true test for McCain is coming after the surge has sort of run its course. And everyone asks the question, well, what about the political process that this surge was supposed to make happen? And if that doesn't occur, I think folks like Senator McCain have to ask some hard questions. And I was struck at a recent press breakfast where McCain was pressed on this, and he kept coming back to a statement. He said, well, at a certain point, you have to make some very hard decisions about what's in the United States' strategic interest in the region. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it did sort of, to me, it sounded like, well, you know, at a certain point, even Senator McCain thinks that, you know, you have to start telling the Iraqis that we're not going to be there forever. So I think the shame may be that McCain may not get all that much credit for his support for the surge, because voters seem to have moved on to other issues now that casualties are down. But I think the supporters of the surge have to make some hard decisions in the next few months.
All right, let's go to another call. We have Harry calling from Sumter, South Carolina. Hi, Harry.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I thought earlier that Senator McCain really decided to cozy up to the Bush supporters and to the religious right in order to get the Republican nomination, and actually more recently has endorsed a lot of right-wing economic positions that seem far from what he was proposing in a few years ago, criticizing Bush's heavy tax cuts for the rich, and now he wants to do away with the inheritance tax and all that kind of stuff. And I really think he's adopted a strategy to win the Republican nomination that was not true to his earlier positions and values.
David Brooks, I know you've got to leave us in a little bit. We'll give you this last shot at this question. We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, I would say on the social issues, I don't think he's shifted that much. He did go speak at Liberty University. He was asked by Jerry Falwell, and he gave the speech. I was more offended that he spoke at the New School in New York, a truly fringe organization. No, I'm just kidding. On the taxes issue, I do think he's changed, and I do think that is a compromise with the views he held. He opposed the Bush tax cuts, thinking they were fiscally unsound at a time of high spending. He's come around and supported that. And I don't know, I can't read his heart, but I do think that is a case where he's compromised the beliefs he had, because the tax issue is just a huge voting issue in New Hampshire, basically.
Just quickly, do you think your views of him are colored by the fact that he gives such great access to reporters?
Absolutely. But that's not totally ridiculous. One of the most important issues for a president is, do they see the world honestly? Can they talk about it honestly? Are they open to discussion and debate? And I would say more than most other candidates, McCain has the ability to see honestly, to talk honestly, and to fundamentally be honest.
Okay, David Brooks, columnist for the New York Times. Thanks for your time. You're going to be leaving us. Ryan Lizza is going to stay with us. I'm James Satori, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with Ryan Lizza, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. He's been covering the presidential campaigns for the magazine. I'd like to bring right now into the conversation Drew Klein. He is the editorial page editor for the New Hampshire's Union Leader, which has just endorsed McCain. He joins us from Manchester, New Hampshire. Drew Klein, welcome.
Thanks.
Well, tell us about the endorsement. Why did your paper make that decision?
Well, there's a long process behind it, but essentially, you know, we went through everybody's policy positions, and then we brought them in for interviews. And we spent a lot of time interviewing the candidates. We spent a couple of hours with Senator McCain. We spent a couple of hours with Governor Romney. And at the end of it all, in our judgment, McCain was, for numerous reasons, the best choice of president. He was, we felt like, the strongest conservative in the race. He was the one most likely to win the general election if he got the nomination, which is very important. And we felt like he was by far the strongest on national security and the war on terror in general, which we view as the more important issue at this point.
Drew, let me put you on hold for just a sec, because joining us right now from his campaign bus, the Straight Talk Express, on a highway somewhere near Salem, New Hampshire, I'm told, is Senator John McCain. Senator McCain, hello.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm good, sir. Are you feeling today like a 71-year-old comeback kid?
I hope so. I hate that phrase, but I think we're seeing an uptick in the town meetings and enthusiasm. And overall, I'm very pleased and grateful, appreciative of the endorsements we've received. And it was a great experience to be with my friend Joe Lieberman yesterday here in New Hampshire. And I'm very grateful for his support. Independents are going to make a big difference in this campaign in New Hampshire and around the country, as I know you know.
I know you've placed a lot of emphasis on New Hampshire. You've done a little bit of less campaigning in Iowa. Do you regret not making more of an effort there now?
No, you've always got to make decisions. We were in Iowa last week, and we'll be back in Iowa. As you know, I don't support ethanol subsidies, and that is a bit. I don't support cotton subsidies in my own state, but so that's a bit of a problem. But I think we'll still try to do well there and keep working.
You've said yourself that the issue of immigration has hurt you, your standing, your aspirations. Do you think that you're feeling pressure now to change that message?
Oh, I can't. The message that I got from our failure because of lack of trust and confidence in government was that we have to secure the borders first. But I still think we need a comprehensive approach. We got to have a temporary worker program. We got to address the issue of the 12 million people who are in this country illegally, and we can't reward them for doing so. But I've said many times, and I'll say again, we have to be humane, compassionate, recognize these are God's children, and at the same time, secure the borders first, because that's what the American people want.
One of our other panelists today is Ryan Lizza, and you told him in an interview that rather than change positions or back away from your stance, you wouldn't want to be president. You don't want to be president that bad. How badly do you want to be president, sir?
Very badly, but not bad enough to abandon my fundamental philosophy and beliefs and positions. Right now the American people have no trust or confidence in government. I can't restore that if I'm going to switch my positions on issues that are important to them, for obvious reasons.
Our other panelists have also noted that you have on occasion admitted that you've perhaps, if not compromised, your beliefs sort of edged that way on a number of issues. Do you regret that, and can you vow that going ahead you'll be a little more circumspect in those decisions?
I'd have to know what that issue is. I haven't changed on any issue that I know of. Maybe you could give me an example, but I have not. In fact, I kind of pride myself on sticking to principles, and even when they may not be the most popular at the time. So you'd have to give me an example in order for me to respond to it. But overall, I know of no position that I have changed on, unless it's, I guess when oil was $10 a barrel, I didn't support ethanol. I support ethanol now that oil is $90 a barrel, but I don't support the subsidies and never have.
Well, let's talk about an issue that you have been very consistent on, and that is Iraq. It turns out that, like you say, the surge has had an effect. And are you feeling that resonate on the campaign trail?
I think so. I hope so. I've tried to point out that I was the only one that's running that condemned the Rumsfeld strategy and advocated the one that's succeeding because of my knowledge and experience and therefore judgment. None of the others who are running had that position. They either took a hike or criticized me for being disloyal to Rumsfeld and the president. So I am far more pleased as far I believe that America now sees a path to success and is moving forward in Iraq. And by the way, Al-Qaeda's on the run. They're not defeated. They're a long way from defeated. But I'm pleased at the success of the surge.
One of your messages as you are on, out on the campaign trail is that we are winning. We are winning. Can you be a little more, can you elaborate a little more on how you know we're winning?
Facts on the ground, all of the numbers, attacks, the casualties, the secure areas, the provinces we've turned over to the Iraqi military. ABC Evening News had a piece a couple nights ago. They went 24 hours in Baghdad without a single incident of violence. People are in the streets. The restaurants are being used. The Iraqi police is doing better. The Iraqi military is doing much better. All statistics indicated. All most diehard anti-war person would not admit that there has been significant success in Iraq, but we have a long way to go, particularly in the government functioning and an installation of rule of law. Rule of law is going to be the hardest part, James.
Senator John McCain aboard the Straight Talk Express somewhere in New Hampshire. Thanks for your time, Senator.
Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, Ryan, you heard the conversation, and he sort of disputed the fact that he backed away from any of his policy positions before. Maybe
yeah,
you can
yeah.
Give us your view of that.
Well, I mean, as David pointed out before on the tax issue, I mean, I think McCain came into this presidential campaign realizing he couldn't be a heretic on every issue that's important to the Republican base. And as far as I can tell, he did shift his position on the importance of the Bush tax cuts. And I think what he's argued in the past is he said, well, in 2000, I thought the Bush tax cut was too big. I wanted a smaller tax cut and more emphasis on deficit reduction. But once the tax cuts have been in place, I believe they were successful. I believe they were good for the economy. And I believe reversing them would be the equivalent of a tax raise. So I think that's, in the past when he's been asked about that, that's his explanation for his shift on taxes, which was the big one we discussed. It was a very interesting interview on Iraq as well. I mean, he clearly wants people to pay attention to Iraq. You know, a lot of Republicans a few months ago didn't want voters to pay attention to Iraq, and most of the Republican candidates don't even talk about Iraq. You rarely hear Romney talking about it. You rarely hear Huckabee talking about it, and you really hear Thompson talking about it. But you know, McCain is the one person that's sort of pointing to the elephant in the room of this campaign.
Let's go back to Drew Klein, editorial page editor for the Union Leader newspaper. Drew, immigration is a big issue, surprisingly to some people, even in New Hampshire and Iowa. Is he vulnerable on that issue, do you think?
It's the issue he's most vulnerable on. Senator McCain told us in the interview that if he loses this election or loses this nomination, it will be because of immigration, and I think he's right. What he did not anticipate, and what I think a lot of people did not anticipate, is how upset Americans are, and Republicans in particular, with the current situation on immigration and the fact that we don't have our borders secure. And he is suffering, I think, for that. I mean, in some states where you wouldn't necessarily expect that to be a top issue, it is. And in New Hampshire, it is a big issue. I mean, we have hardly any, you know, in the southern part of the state, we do have a decent number of, you know, Hispanic immigrants, migrant workers doing construction jobs and so forth, but a tiny fraction of the population. And yet, it is a big issue here that gets people upset. And so I agree with the senator that if he does lose this, it will be largely because of that. The other thing that he I don't think really understands is the extent to which conservatives are upset with him over McCain-Feingold. There's a great deal of dissatisfaction with him on that because a lot of groups that are affected negatively by that law are conservative groups. And, you know, they see the consequences of that, not being able to put up ads within 60 days of an election and so forth. So I think those are two issues that are hurting him the most.
Okay, let's take another call. Let's go to Dory, who is in Fairfield, Iowa. Dory, are you there?
Yes, I am. I was hoping to speak to Senator McCain, but glad to be on anyway. He's one guy I've always admired, especially for his stance unequivocally against torture, which was like a voice in the wilderness, it seemed, in the last few years. But I wanted to mention that for many of us independent thinkers, you know, his whole portrayal of the idea of the war as winning or losing is not really helpful because there's so many other things. He did speak to that a little bit when he was on, but, you know, ultimately you can't create peace through war. And it's not that, you know, most people are not totally against military intervention, but this one, it's creating more terrorists than it's stopping. I mean, I've spoken to people in that part of the world, and they're like, doesn't your president realize that, you know, when you're killing all these people, you're creating more hatred and more terrorists? So I just want to throw that out there.
Drew, how does that issue play in New Hampshire?
Well, I think the idea that you can't create peace through war would surprise a lot of Europeans who have been at peace for the last half century because the Allies went to war. So I don't think that's that angle on it is what people in New Hampshire are hearing. But there are a lot of people in New Hampshire, independents and Republicans who sort of lean libertarian, who are upset with the war for some reasons. I mean, some of them are upset because they didn't think we should have gone in at all, and some of them are upset because of the way it was managed. I don't think McCain's getting a great deal of support among those who thought we should never have gone in, except I think perhaps you're starting to see some second thoughts about him on that issue, because people are saying, look, you know, he supported the war, sure, and I didn't, but his position on it is honorable. He's never been dishonest. He's never misled on it. And he wants to end it, but he wants to end it the right way. And I think, I don't think that issue is hurting him as much as, say the immigration issue is.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Bruce is in Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Bruce. Bruce, you there? Apparently not. Ryan, could you weigh in on that last question, maybe?
No, I was just going to add one thing to the sort of how hot this immigration issue is and how important it is to McCain's campaign. Today, the New Hampshireites started receiving in the mail a mailer from the McCain campaign attacking Mitt Romney on the issue, saying that basically Mitt Romney is attacking John McCain on immigration because Romney himself has now flip-flopped on it. And it points out the story that the Boston Globe broke about Mitt Romney using a lawn care company that hired illegal immigrants. So the McCain is now trying to play some defense finally on that issue.
Yeah, and the other thing I would point out in immigration is that Giuliani and Romney both got very early on how important immigration is, and their public statements on immigration have been very much in line with the conservative mainstream base of the Republican Party. But if you look back at their history on this issue, it's very problematic for conservative voters. The question is, do conservative voters look at these two guys and say, okay, we believe what they're saying now, or do they, and does that sway them to support these guys, or do they look at McCain and say, you know, at least he's honest and upfront on where he stands on this issue? I mean, I think at this moment they're sort of looking at Romney and going, okay, you know, I believe him, and I think that's in a large part helping his campaign.
Ryan, Lizza, it seems like McCain has been reluctant talking about getting his message out to the voters, has been a bit reluctant to go negative. Do you see it that way, and do you think that'll hurt him?
Well, he's even promised, I believe, not to attack his opponents. This mailer is the furthest I've seen him go in attacking someone, you know, calling Mitt Romney a flip-flopper, which is, you know, sort of par for the course as far as attacking Mitt. It's the first time he's gone there. I don't think there's a whole lot of love between Mitt Romney and John McCain. I was pressing, a few of the reporters were pressing McCain on which candidates in the Republican field he likes. He named several. But he declined to name Mitt Romney and basically said that he just didn't know the guy all that well, which is often a way of answering in the affirmative without actually doing it. And just to follow up on Drew's point, I think we're going to learn in this Republican primary whether the way to win the nomination is to just let the market determine your views. In other words, if you've got some, you know, if you were wrong on some of these conservative issues, just shift like Romney did and become, you know, a great champion of these issues. Or is it going to be about character? Is it going to be about saying that you may disagree with me on a couple of things, but it's more important for me to stand on principle? And that, to me, is going to be the great test of the Republican nomination.
I would agree with that, and that's really one of the primary reasons why we endorsed Senator McCain, because we felt like this is a man who says what he believes. He has honor, integrity, and character. And we don't agree with him on several issues, and we put that in the first editorial. We strongly disagree with him on campaign finance reform. We disagree with him on the way he has approached immigration reform and some other issues. And we were critical on some of his statements and on interrogation techniques and on his amendment that he introduced on interrogation techniques.
Quick answer from both of you here, because we just got a minute left. What do you think the odds are that he'll be the nominee for the Republicans? And why do you think that is? Quickly.
Long odds, but, the union leader endorsed him, and then everything started to fall in line. The Boston Globe and the Des Moines Register. So we've spoken, and the world will listen.
Ryan, quickly.
I'd say it's, about 30% chance that he'd be the nominee. But it's a wide open field. Any of these guys could win it. So anyone that tells you they know who's going to win just doesn't know what they're talking about.
It's a fun game, though. I'd like to thank Drew Klein, editorial page editor for the Union Leader newspaper in New Hampshire. Thanks, Drew. And Ryan Lizza, staff writer for The New Yorker. Thanks to you, Ryan. You can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm James Hattori, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.